hope you find it the same way. Our study on some of the stories in the Old Testament, and certainly Abraham, his story, his beginning from the beginning of his life to the end, takes up quite a bit of the book of Genesis. And so we're going through that right now. And if you remember last week, in chapter 12, we looked at one of the instances of his lack of faith in the Lord, when he offered his wife, told the Pharaoh in Egypt that she was his sister, to keep from losing his own life. And that was, you want to say, it was a figment of his own imagination, because there really no one had threatened his life. It was just that he thought that it might happen. That's how the scripture presents it. It was his own thoughts. We don't know if, and he didn't know if, the Pharaoh or the men in Egypt would have killed him for his wife or not. Why would he think that? Well, oftentimes in their day and time, that did happen. So he had a reason to think that way, but again, he didn't have a reason to think that way, because he's a child of God. He should never have worried about that. This week, we see more of the faith of Abraham. In this story, we begin looking at Abraham and his nephew, Lot, in chapter 13. And this continues on for a few more chapters, so we're only going to look in chapter 13. This time we'll touch a little bit on chapter 14, but if you look in Genesis 13, verse 1, "And Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south." Now, remember, they had left the land of Canaan. God had, in the first part of chapter 12, God had promised him the land of Canaan. He told him that was going to be the land that he was going to give his descendants eventually. And he told Abram to sojourn there and check it out and see what was there. In the meantime, there was a famine in the land. And so they had to leave. Remember, they both, Abram, and we'll talk more about this in a moment, but Abram and Lot both had large flocks and herds of cattle and sheep and camels and goats and whatever else they would have had in that day. And so this famine that was in the land of Canaan was not enough to support those animals and their families. And so they traveled to Egypt, where there was the fertile plains of the Nile River and other places there, and thought that they could stay for a time until the land of Canaan was over the famine. And so that's what happens. So now they're coming back from Egypt into the south, it says. Well, it's in the southern part of what we know as Israel. "And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold." Abram was a very wealthy man. Remember, his father had passed away just before they had left Haran and went into the land of Canaan. His father had passed away there. He would have, being the oldest son, would inherited a great deal of his father's possessions. And so one would have to assume, anyway, that a lot of this cattle and silver and gold came from his father's inheritance. Also remember, Lot, being his nephew, would have inherited his father's share, Abraham's brother's share of that inheritance. It wouldn't have been as much as Abram's, but it would have been a great deal, certainly. And then remember, there was a third brother. Abram had a third brother. That brother and his family would have inherited their share. Now, and he went in on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, under the place of the altar which he had made there at the first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now, if you go back to chapter 12, and we'll start with verse 4 through 8. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. This is when they left Haran. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. I want you to remember this, Abram's age here. When they left Haran, he was 75 years old. Remember when Isaac was born, he was around 100. So that was 25 years later. As we're reading through this story, and even into chapter 13 and 14, remember all these things that Abram does. He's not a young man. He's older. But we see him doing things that a young man would do. Chapter 14, we'll get into and see where he fought battles. As he led his servants that were trained military men into battle. So he was an older man at this time, he was in pretty good shape for his age. Back in verse 5, and Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came, and Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, under the plain of Moriah. The Canaanite, the Canaanite was in the land. So at this time, the Canaanites possessed the land. He was a foreigner there. This was not his land yet. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on his west, and Hai on his east, on the east, and there he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. So this is the same place that we see in chapter 13. He goes back. Abram and Lot go back to the land between Bethel and Hai, and to the altar that he had already built to worship God. And he says, in there Abram called on the name of the Lord. What do you think he called on the name of the Lord about? I would think it was asking direction for what to do next. It would be one thing. Maybe it was just to worship the Lord, or both. It could be multiple things. But I want us to notice, though, it's Abram only. There's no mention, and we'll read through the rest of this story, no mention ever of Lot building an altar and going before God. Did he? It don't tell us. We don't know. But we don't see it either. I've got two thoughts on that. One is Abram being the elder in the family now. Remember, his dad had passed away. Abram's the elder in the family now. Lot's father has passed away. Lot is under the authority of Abram for now, until they separate later in this chapter. In their day and time, oftentimes, the elder of the family was the one you would see build the altar and worship and offer the sacrifices for the family. That's one possibility, okay? I'm not saying that that's how this was, but that's one possibility. And before I mess up, let me get back to my notes. Another reason could be the Lord wanted us, or whoever was reading this story, to concentrate on the life of Abram and not on the life of Lot. Now, Lot is talked about a lot here. So I don't know that that's the reason. I don't believe that's the reason. for whatever reason, we see Lot is not as faithful a man to God as Abram was. Verse 5, and Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. No mention of Lot having silver and gold, is there? Another tradition in their day and time was the eldest son usually got most of the gold and the silver, the money. He would have also gotten the best of the flocks and the herds of cattle and whatever else they had. The other sons, with there being two other sons, and of course Lot being the son of one of those sons, they would have gotten smaller amounts of the flocks and the herds. But remember, they've been traveling around out there for quite a while, so their herds have grown. Their herds and their flocks have grown. And not just their herds and flocks. Remember, they've got others with them. They've got not just their families. And, of course, we've not seen any mention yet of Lot's wife. That doesn't come till later. So I'm not sure when Lot actually married. We don't know if his family, if his wife and family is with him at this point in time or not. It doesn't tell us. But we know Abram has his wife with him. We know that she's barren, and so they don't have a family. But remember, they've got servants, both of them. They've got herdsmen, it says. And they would have had families. They would have had growing families. So they've got a very large group of people and a very large group of animals that they're wandering around with. In verse 6, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. So their herds had gotten so big, and their herdsmen, their servants that were with them had gotten so big in number, the land couldn't handle all of them together. So Abram makes a proposal. He says, and there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. Now, if you've ever watched an old Western when they were held with cattle drives, or read any of those stories of the cowboys on their cattle drives, if you had two herds of cattle come together, there was often strife because you were trying to keep each other's brands separated. I would imagine that's what they were having a problem with here. They were trying to keep their property separated, and the herdsmen were fighting amongst themselves because of this. Some were trying to claim each other's cattle. They probably had animals that were breeding with the other ones, and you got to separate those. You know, so there was strife amongst the two. And remember, these are all family. Lot and Abram are both family, uncle and nephew. And he says, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land. So they were not citizens here. They were foreigners, remember? They had sojourned to the land where God had told them to go, but there was other people who controlled the land, that it was, at this point in time, was their land. But God has promised it to Abram. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. We're family, in other words. We can't be fighting. That's ridiculous. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. So Abram makes a fair proposal here to Lot. He's going to let Lot, the younger of the two, make the choice. Now, oftentimes, that's not how it worked. Oftentimes, the elder would say, I'm going to take this part, and you got what's left. And he'd have been in all rights to that. He could have done that. But that's not what he did. We see the humbleness of Abram here. He's a godly man, remember? And he tells Lot, go the way you want to go, and I'll go the other way. We'll separate. What's he doing here? Well, Lot is grown now. He's no longer a boy. He's raised his own flocks and herds and has his own servants. It's time for him to go his own way. That's part of the tradition that they had back then. Okay, is this whether they had been father and son or they've been uncle and nephew like these two were, it's time now for Lot to go his own way and make his own life, is the way we would put it. And what's Lot do? Verse 10, and Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. So a few things I want to look at here. Lot lifted up his eyes. Do we see a Lot building an altar and going to God and asking which direction to go? No, we don't, do we? Abram did that. I remember Abram before they separated, Abram built, he went back to the place where he had already built an altar, and he called on the name of the Lord. Here, we see Lot doesn't do that. It's like so many, and maybe we catch ourselves doing it today. You know, we go out and make a major purchase, or we go and move across the country, or we go and do whatever without asking the Lord. You know, maybe he's got something else for us. If you want to be miserable, go out on your own and see what happens. It can turn out bad in some cases. So Lot lifted up his eyes. He didn't seek the Lord, and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. He picked the best. Now, remember, Abram, being humble, offered what to Lot, whatever he wanted, which to go whichever way. Wouldn't you think if Lot was a godly man and a humble man, that he would have said, Abram, this is the best over here. Why don't you go that way and I'll go the other way? That would have been, for a Christian, that's what we should do, isn't it? But Lot doesn't do that. Lot takes the best for himself. And if you remember the rest of the story, Lot pays for it. He says, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, I've seen several documentaries on the Dead Sea and the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. And I don't remember, but very few of them ever talking about how beautiful the land was before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And remember, he didn't destroy just Sodom and Gomorrah. We'll see that at a later time. But he destroyed the cities of the plains. There were several cities, Sodom and Gomorrah being the two he concentrated on. But he says, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, it was a beautiful place. Remember, this was part of the Fertile Crescent. This was in the valley of the River Jordan. This was a very beautiful place at that time. And obviously, enough so that Lot saw that it would handle his herds. And then, he even compares it to the Garden of Eden. He says, even as the garden of the Lord. What is the garden of the Lord? The Garden of Eden. This was how beautiful that place was. What is it today? It's one of the deepest places on the face of the earth, because it got pounded into the ground by God for their sin. It's so salty there that not much can live there. There is life there, but not much. It's not, certainly not as the garden of the Lord now, is it? All the places around it are desert, pile of rocks, and the city, Sodom and Gomorrah, there's very little evidence of them left. People claim they find pieces of brimstone there, and I don't doubt that. I'm just saying that's what they claim, that they found pieces of brimstone there. Where, and it's not explainable by human studies. They don't know why. There's no volcanoes in that area. Never has been. So it could not have been from a volcano. It had to come from heaven. Nowhere else could it have come from. And it says, like the land of Egypt. Remember, they had just left Egypt. And Egypt at one time was a beautiful place. It wasn't the desert that it is now. As though, or as thou comest unto Zoar. Zoar was another city in the area, in the plains. Zoar was kind of the whole area there. It was named Zoar also, but Sodom and Gomorrah were separate cities from Zoar. And Zoar, if you study that, eventually becomes Moab. You remember the Moabites that gave Israel so much trouble? That's who lived and who possessed this land later. And remember, this is all in the plain of Jordan. This is in the valley of, in the plains of the River Jordan. And if you look in verse 11, it tells us a little bit more. It says, then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east. This is on the, all this is on the east side of the Jordan River, which is, isn't that how, what God promised Abram? Abram was going to possess everything west of Jordan. If you go fast forward several books to the book of Joshua, he tells Joshua the dimensions and the layout of the promised land, of what they're supposed to possess. They weren't supposed to go past the River Jordan. That was their boundary on the east side. So Lot settles on the east side of the River Jordan. And this, I believe, is more of God's providence, because if he had settled on the west side, if he had taken the west side instead of the east side, that would have been against the promise that God made to Abram. Abram possessed the west side of the Jordan. And he says, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. So Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plains. What was one of the things, even way back, what God had always warned his people of living in the world? And Lot is a prime example of one of God's children living in the world. He separates himself from Abram, which they needed to. We see that. That was a necessary thing. But what did he do? He went to the cities. Now, of course, his herds could not be in the cities. You know, it says that he journeyed east. He says that he dwelled in the he dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. So he, at this point in time, he doesn't move into the city, but he lives close to the city of Sodom. Because of his herds, he can't move into town. We'll see later in chapter 14, you will see where Lot loses everything, or it appears that he does. Now, and the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. Do they have it today? No. It's given to them, but they don't possess it. They possessed part of it in the Old Testament after Joshua took them across the river into the land, and they took the land by force like God told them to. But they never possessed all of it. If you go and read in Joshua, and you see, maybe that'll be one of the stories we read later. Joshua was told the boundaries of the land, but they never took all of it. They don't have all of it today. If they were to take all the land today, you'd see a major upheaval in the Middle East, because they would possess much of what Islam has now. All the way up, if my understanding, it's all the way up to Turkey, to the eastern side of Turkey. So, notice it says, the Lord said unto Abram. Notice we haven't seen, at least not yet, the Lord speaking to Lot. Did the Lord discourage Lot from going the way he went? No. At least in our way of thinking in Christianity today, Lot would have been better off to stay with Abram, or at least stayed close, not maybe not together like they were because of the strife that was happening, but at least stayed close where they could have protected each other. Lot could have continued to learn from Abram, you know, but that's not what the Lord's will was it? And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up thine eyes. Notice the Lord tells Abram, now lift up your eyes and let me show you where I'm going to take you. Northward, southward, eastward, and westward. You're going to travel over this whole territory. I'm going to show you everything that I'm going to give your descendants. For all the land which thou seest to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. Did Abraham possess the land? No, he was allowed to travel throughout it without any problems for the most part. The Lord did let him go and see all of it. And if you think about it, with him having the flocks and the herds that he had, you had to keep moving. Otherwise, your animals would deplete the grass and whatever else they ate in areas. He had to keep moving. That was a necessity. But also because of that, he was able to travel throughout the whole land and see how or what his descendants would possess. And God makes him this promise. And remember, he made him this promise back in chapter 12 and verse 1. He says, now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curse thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So God made him that promise back in chapter 12 before he actually got to the land. And now that he's there, God is showing him around. He says, I'm going to show you what I'm giving you. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And when God says something forever, he means forever. That doesn't mean it's for a short time. Now, we know, like I said before, we know from our other studies we've done in the Old Testament, through the, our brother Compton went through and did our Sunday school lessons. When I first came here, he was going through the books of the Kings and studying the Kings. And then you go into, when we went into the book of Jeremiah and went on through some others there, you see that God took the land away from them because they had become like the world. They had blasphemed God. They had committed a spiritual adultery against God. And for a time, God took the land away from them. And he told them he would do it. If they didn't stay faithful, he told them he would take it away from them. And he did. But remember God's promise. It was their land forever. Now, he took them away from them for a time, but eventually they're going to get it back. when does that happen? Some will try to say, well, they're going to take it back. Some out there, I don't know where they get it from, think that they're going to take it back in our lifetime. The Israel that's over there now is not the Israel that God talks about in the Scripture. And they may be some of God's elect over there. I'm not saying that. But the nation of Israel that's there now is not the nation of Israel that's going to possess the land. That doesn't happen in our lifetime. This is temporary. What we see over there now is just temporary. They don't possess the land until eternity for the final time. There's going to be a time during the millennium that they're going to control it. But even then, that's just temporary until Satan is loosed again. But then, once we enter eternity, they're going to possess all of the land. Not just part of it, like they've had in the past, but all of it. And remember, again, I don't know where this comes from. Nobody can convince me that there's any scriptures that lead this direction, but Israel is not the same as the church. The church did not replace Israel. Israel is not the bride of Christ. God called her his wife at times before he divorced her, but Israel, God's elect in Israel, unless like our Sunday school teacher mentioned this morning, where we know that the first churches had a lot of Jews in them, those Jews will be in the bride of Christ. But the nation of Israel that is spoken of will not be the bride of Christ, or will be in the bride of Christ. I believe they will be some of those who it talks about there in Revelation that go in and out of the city. They're not going to be living in the city either. Will the new city of Jerusalem be in Israel? Yes, I believe it tells us that it's going to set in where old Jerusalem sat. And I'm getting way ahead of myself in our story, but that's some things to think about. Abram at this time, he's still called Abram at this time. Abram was made these promises way back then. Did he have a clue what it all entailed? No, I don't believe he did. I believe the Lord showed him some of it. I think the Lord helped him, or may have even helped him understand that his seed was going to be possessing the land forever. I think he understood that part. But timelines and details and all that, I don't think he understood all that. There's no way, unless the Lord showed it to him. And he says in verse 16, "And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered." That's a great many people, is it not? And, the Lord mentions several times throughout the Scriptures that they were just a remnant. At least the elect of Israel were a remnant. Now, he calls them the dust as the number of the dust of the earth, or some places he calls it as the sands of the seashore. There's other illustrations, the stars in the sky that they're referred to sometimes. All we know is it's a great number. We have no idea how large that number is that Israel, or that the seed of Abram would become. Also remember, it was not only Israel that was the seed of Abram. Abram had other seed, not just through the line of Isaac and Jacob, but there was also Ishmael, remember? And some say that this, as the dust of the earth, refers to all of Abram's seed, which it could, because God is not... Now, this seed that he's speaking of here that's going to possess the land, of course, has got to be Isaac's seed. But there are places where the Lord does talk about all of Abram's seed, even Ishmael's line. But in this case, I believe he's only talking about Isaac's and Jacob's line. "Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Walk. That's a long walk, isn't it? I don't have the map over here this morning, but on our map last week we noticed where we saw where from Ur of the Chaldees to Haran, where they traveled first, was over 600 miles. And it's a little less than that, but it's down to where they stopped in the land of Canaan first, was not quite that far before they went into Egypt. But still, to walk all around what God was going to give his seed, that's a large area to walk. But what else did he have to do? You know, here's this 75-plus-year-old man with a great caravan, a great number of flocks and cattle and herds of cattle and servants and their families. What else has he got to do other than, you know, worship God and oversee all his possessions? And they've got to move around so they don't deplete the land of the grasses and whatever else they needed. So, supposedly over his lifespan, the rest of his lifespan, they walk around the land of Canaan and survey what would be his and what he would be passing down through his heritage. Then Abram removed his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. So he builds another altar unto the Lord. Do we see, back to Lot, do we see Lot building an altar to the Lord in Sodom? No. And we'll talk more about Lot next time. But we see the Lord tell Abram to go to the land of Canaan. The Lord promises Abram that all the land he sees will one day belong to Abram's seed. The Lord tells Abram to sojourn there and to walk through the land, and the Lord will show Abram what all comes with this promise. Remember, the Canaanites and the Perizzites possessed the land at this time. It's not his yet, but the Lord has promised it to him. And then in verse 18, we see Abram build another altar in a different place this time, unto the Lord. Next time, we're going to look at chapter 14. We're going to close with this. We'll look at chapter 14 and maybe a little bit further. In chapter 14, we're going to see two firsts. One, we'll see the first time Abram is called a Hebrew. Remember the beginning of this study, we said Abraham was the first Jew or first Hebrew. God calls him a Hebrew in chapter 14. And then we will see the king of Salem, Melchizedek, for the first time. Our Sunday school teacher, I believe he talked about him the last Wednesday night, I think. A very interesting man to study. I won't go into great depth since he's already talked about him, but we'll touch on him. But anyway, chapter 14, has those two first. We don't see Abram being called a Hebrew before then. After that, the line of Isaac and Jacob will be known as Hebrews. And especially when you get into Joshua, when he's in Egypt, we'll see they become known as the Hebrews, the Hebrew children, or the children of Israel. And those are all in the lineage of not just Abraham, but in the lineage of Christ, his earthly family. So we'll stop there for this morning.